Ashby sat in the hotel room he'd paid for an hour earlier. He was thinking about Waterball. Not that he particularly cared about Waterball, but it was easier to handle than the alternative. When he'd woken up that morning, he'd been ready for a day of haggling and spending credits, the high point of which might have been drinks and a good meal in a sleepy bar. Now, he was on the dark side of Coriel, surrounded by thick pillows and ugly wall hangings while he waited for pay, who was not only alive and well, but close by and intent on having sex with him. Waterball was easier to process. Okay, Titan Cup finalists, year 303, let's see. The Whitecaps had to have been playing because Kizzy freaked out when Kimmy St. Clair tore a ligament. The Starbursts were there, right? Yeah. You bought Aya a Starbursts jersey for her birthday that year. She said they were her favorite. Left unchecked, his thoughts jumped like a D-pod, ducking in and out before he could lay any of them to rest. He had too many feelings lobbying for attention. Relief over Pei's safety. Joy over seeing her at any moment. Baseless worry that her feelings had ebbed. Determination to follow her lead. Stars only knew how she was feeling after tens of 10 days spent skirting war zones. And fear. Fear, which he felt every time they met. Fear that in the 10 days ahead, after she'd returned to more dangerous space, this hello might end up being a goodbye. No, the Starbursts had to have been 302, not 303. That was the same birthday Aya got her first starter scrib, which means she was starting school, which means 302. There was a vague anxiety, too, the concern that they'd get caught this time. He couldn't think of anything he'd left unchecked. Their system for avoiding notice was old hat by now. He always found the hotel, nothing flashy, something off the beaten path, and preferably somewhere they hadn't been before. He'd make it clear to the desk staff that he needed some rest and didn't want to be disturbed for any reason. Once in his room, he'd send Pei a message with nothing but the hotel name and the room number, which she'd delete after reading. 2 hours later, long enough to prevent anyone from suspecting anything, she'd arrive at the hotel and request whatever room number was adjacent to his. This was easily done, as complex numerology was a well-known component of traditional Aeluan culture. There were so many conflicting systems for finding meanings within numerical sequences that no matter what room number Ashby got, Pei could find a way to put a positive spin on the number she requested. A non-Aeluan desk worker would assume that Pei wanted a room with a number that symbolized peace or good health, whereas an Aeluan would just see her as unusually old-fashioned for her age. And perhaps a little silly. After settling into her room, Pei would knock on the adjoining wall. Ashby would make sure the hallway was empty, then leave his room. After that, they were good to go. A lengthy song and dance to go through just to see each other, but a necessary one. As open and generous as Aeluans generally were to their galactic neighbors, interspecies coupling remained a mainstream taboo. Ashby didn't understand the logic behind that. It was a non-issue for most humans, at least where bipedal species were concerned. But he understood the danger for Pei. An Aeluan could lose her family and friends over an alien relationship. She could lose her job, especially when on a government contract. And for someone like Pei, who took pride in being a hard worker with a honed skill set, that kind of shame would cut deep. Ashby, focus, the Whitecaps. The Hammers, the Falcons? No, they haven't made it to a semifinal match since you were crewing aboard the Calling Dawn. What about the, Stars, Ashby, come on. Waterball. Alongside all the emotional distractions he was trying to subdue, Ashby was engaged in a battle of wills, a fight between brains and biology. He knew it was pretty much a given that he'd be getting laid any moment. But he didn't want to be presumptuous. He had no idea what she'd been through prior to this meeting, and until he had a clear sense of where she was at, he was going to let her make the first move. And even if she was on the same page as him, well, he still had good manners. Even if his body was getting ahead of itself. Ashby, Waterball semifinals. Year 303, the Skydivers won. Who else was... A knock came through the wall. quiet but clear. He left the Titan cup behind.
Soap!
Kizzy cried, pointing to a stall full of bathing goods.
Look at them, they're like cakes!
She ran off, her hefty bag of purchases bouncing against her back.
I guess I could use some scale scrub, Sissix said.
She and Rosemary followed the mech tech, who was already poking through display baskets. The shop was run by a Hermogian merchant, whose offerings catered to the needs of many species. Coarse brushes and bundles of herbs for Andrisk steam baths, fizzing tablets and warming salves for the icy plunges preferred by Aeluans, skin scrapers and cleansing tonics for Hermogians, a modest yet cheerful selection of human soaps and shampoos, and dozens more jars, bottles, and cans that Rosemary could not identify. The galaxy's sapient species could find many cultural commonalities, but few topics were quite as contentious as the proper way to get clean. The Hermogian, a male, as Rosemary could tell by the color of the spots across his back, whirred over on his treaded cart as they approached.
A pleasant day to you, dear guests, he said,
his chin tendrils curling happily.
Have you come to browse, or do you have something special in mind?
The dactyli on the ends of his three front tentacles spread open in a helpful gesture. He was elderly, and the pale yellow skin covering his amorphous body lacked the moistness of youth. Rosemary had known Hermogians before, her Hanto professor for one, and several of her father's regular dinner guests, but she always had trouble reconciling their appearance with their history. The person before her was, like all his species, a mollusk-like blob who couldn't move around quickly without the help of his cart. He didn't have teeth or claws. He didn't have bones. Yet somehow, there had been a time when this squishy species had controlled a significant portion of the galaxy. And they still did, if you watched where the credits flowed, but they weren't in the habit of subjugating indigenous sapients anymore. She had once read a paper by an Aeluan historian who suggested that the Hermogians' physical frailty was exactly what had helped them develop a technological edge over other species. Want and intelligence, the historian had written, is a dangerous combination. When she considered the historical context, Rosemary thought their presence in the shop made for a rather odd tableau. A Hermogian, an aging son of a former empire, an Andrisk, whose people had moderated the talks that granted independence to Hermogian colonies and ultimately founded the GC, and two humans, a meager species that would have been ripe for the picking if they had been discovered during the days of Hermogian conquest. All standing together, amicably discussing the sale of soap. Time was a curious equalizer. Kizzy poked around the Hermogian's offerings.
Have you got any? Oh, can I ask you in Hanto? I've been taking a course on the linkings and I want to practice.
Sissix eyed Kizzy with skepticism.
Since when?
Dunno, 5 days ago? The slits on the end of the Hermogian's eye stalks crinkled with amusement.
Please let me hear.
Kizzy cleared her throat and coughed out a few wobbly syllables. Rosemary cringed. Not only had Kizzy spoken nonsense, but without the accompanying gestures, the attempt had come across as a bit rude. But the Hermogian ululated in laughter.
Oh, my dear guest, he said, tendrils quivering. Forgive me, but that was the worst pronunciation I have ever heard.
Kizzy gave a sheepish grin.
Oh, no,
she said and laughed.
It is not your fault, said the Hermogian. Humans have much difficulty in mimicking our tonal shifts.
Rosemary put a hand near her collarbone and waggled her fingers, as she had done many times. It was a crude imitation of tendril gestures, but it was the best a human could do.
Pala, Ramtalan, Rakaima, Huk, Asketelun, Hama Tul Baskratan Kib, she said.
Perhaps, dear host, but with some extended effort, we can share your fine words. Kizzy and Sissix turned their heads toward Rosemary in unison, as if seeing her for the first time. The Hermogian flexed his tendrils with respect.
Well and successfully done, dear guest, he said, speaking in his own tongue.
Are you a spacer merchant?
Rosemary stretched her fingers. Not a merchant and only recently a spacer, she said.
We three crew are aboard a tunneling ship. The words were true, but they still sounded strange, as if they belonged to someone else's life. My friends and I have come to the port to acquire supplies.
Ah, tunneling! A well-traveled life. You will need plenty of things to keep you clean along the way.
The Harmagian straightened his tendrils cheekily. His eye slits dilated as he shifted his gaze to Kizzy.
Have you found something to your liking? He asked in clip.
Kizzy held a brick of blood-red soap. I need this, she said, pressing her nose against it and inhaling deeply. Oh, my stars! What is this?
That's made with boiled evberry, the Harmagian said. A very popular scent in my homeworld, though, of course, we don't mix it into soap. What you hold there is a fine blending of our two cultures.
I'll take it! Kizzy handed the Harmagian the soap. He took hold of it with two of his smaller tentacles, each covered in a sheath-like glove to protect his delicate skin. He zipped behind the counter and busied himself with foil and ribbon.
There you go, dear guest, said the Harmagian, handing her the attractively wrapped bundle. Just chip off a little piece of it at a time. It'll last longer that way.
Kizzy stuck her nose to the wrapper again. That smells good. Check it out, Rosemary. Rosemary couldn't help but inhale as Kizzy shoved the block of soap into her face. The scent was thickly sweet and sugary, like cake. She imagined using it would be like bathing in a meringue.
That's 860 credits, if you please, thank you, the Harmagian said.
Kizzy stuck out her hand to Rosemary. Can I have the chip? Rosemary blinked, not sure if she had understood.
You want the company chip?
Yeah, it's soap, Kizzy said. Soap is cool, right? Rosemary cleared her throat and looked down at her scrib. No, soap wasn't cool, not fancy soap. But how could she tell Kizzy that? She had come onto Kizzy's ship, been welcomed by Kizzy with open arms, let Kizzy buy her too many drinks, had vastly less experience than Kizzy in things like tunneling and shopping in neutral ports. But even so, I'm sorry, Kizzy, but, we can only use the chip for common use soap. If you want special soap, you have to get it yourself. She felt the words come out of her mouth, and she hated them. She sounded like a killjoy.
But,
Kizzy started. Without a word, Sissix grabbed Kizzy's wrist and pressed it to the merchant scanner. There was a corresponding chirp, indicating her account had been accepted.
Hey,
Kizzy said.
You can afford it, Sissix said. A pleasure doing business with you, said the merchant. Do come back when you are next in port.
His voice was friendly, but Rosemary could tell by his twisting tendrils that the exchange over payment had made him awkward. She gestured a quick, silent apology. He gave her a respectful flex and scooted off to help other customers. Sissix frowned at Kizzy as they exited the shop.
Kiz, if we're flying through a rough patch and I tell everybody to drop what they're doing and strap down, what do you do?
Kizzy looked confused.
What?
Just answer the question.
I stop what I'm doing and strap down, Kizzy said.
Even if it's inconvenient?
Yeah.
And if you need somebody to not use water taps for a while because you need to fix the lines, which is hugely inconvenient, what do we do?
Kizzy scratched the tip of her nose. You stop using taps, she said. Sissix pointed at Rosemary.
This woman here has the worst job of all of us. She has to live on our ship with all us gloriously stubborn dustheads, and tell us which of our well-worn habits are against the rules. That sounds scary as hell to me, but she's done it without coming across like a hatch parent. So even though it's not always convenient, we're going to listen to her when she needs to do her job, because we expect her to do the same in return.
She looked to Rosemary, who was busy hoping the ground might swallow her up.
And you, Rosemary, have the right to kick our asses over stuff like this, because not passing inspections or getting grounded over unpaid invoices is every bit as much trouble for this crew as anything else.
Unpaid invoices won't suck you into space, mumbled Kizzy.
You know what I mean, said Sissix.
Kizzy sighed. Rosemary, I am sorry for being a jerk, she said, looking at her toes. She lifted up her block of soap as if she were paying homage to royalty.
Please accept my soap as an apology.
Rosemary gave a little laugh. It's no problem, she said, relieved that she hadn't been perceived as the jerk. Keep your soap.
Kizzy considered this.
Can I buy you lunch at least?
Really, it's okay.
Let her buy you food, said Sissix. Otherwise, she's going to come up with some other ridiculous gift out of penance.
Hey, you like the 12 days of jam cakes, Kizzy said.
That I did, said Sissix. I almost wish you'd break my scrib more often.
Knocked it into a pot of soup,
Kizzy confessed to Rosemary.
And stuck her arm in after it, said Sissix.
Out of reflex?
And spent the next hour in the med bay getting her burns treated.
Whatever, you got jam cakes, stop being mean.
Sissix pointed at Rosemary's scrib.
We need anything else in this district before we eat?
Rosemary scrolled through the list. I don't think so. Didn't you say you wanted some scale scrub?
Yeah, I didn't like what he had, though, Sissix said. Mind if we keep looking?
The three crewmates drifted from stall to stall, inquiring after scale scrub. After several apologetic no's, one puzzled look, and one long-necked LaRue who swore that his holistic desert salts would work just as well, Kizzy tugged on Sissix's vest.
I bet that lady's got some, she said, pointing.
Where? Said Sissix, turning around.
Her face softened when she saw the merchant, an old Andrisk woman, seated beneath a small woven canopy, surrounded on three sides by tables full of handmade goods. The woman's feathers were faded, their frills worn and sparse. Her skin was cracking, like old leather. And though the single garment she wore, a soft pair of trousers, was bright and clean, something solemn hung around her scaled shoulders. Sissix said something to herself in Riskitkish. The sibilant words were lost on Rosemary, but she saw Kizzy's eyebrows knit together. Sissix pressed a palm toward her companions.
Sorry, ladies, wait here. I'll try not to be long.
She headed for the merchant, who was too busy stirring a cup of something hot to see Sissix approach. Rosemary and Kizzy looked at each other.
Do you know what she said? Rosemary asked.
My Riskitkish sucks, Kizzy said.
But she sounded upset. Dunno what she's up to.
She nodded at a nearby bench. Guess we'll chill for a bit. They took a seat. Across from them, the merchant looked up at Sissix. The old Andrisk smiled, but she looked hesitant, as if she were embarrassed about something. Rosemary could see Sissix's mouth moving, but the words were lost to distance. Not that Rosemary could understand the language anyway. As Sissix spoke, her hands weaved in subtle patterns, shifting and darting like small flocks of birds. The old woman's hands moved in response. At first, their respective motions were discordant, but as their conversation continued, they began to mirror each other.
Do you know Andrus can speak? Rosemary asked.
Kizzy glanced up from the lock of hair she was braiding. Not really. Sis taught me a couple of them, just basic stuff. Hello, thanks. I enjoy your company, but I don't want to have sex. She watched Sissix and the merchant for a moment. She shook her head.
I have no idea. They're way too fast. But Sissix is speaking out loud, too, which is interesting.
Why would she speak if she's using sign language?
No, it's not like a sign language. Hand speak doesn't match up with Riskitkish.
Rosemary was puzzled. This is a stupid question, but then what is it?
Is it like facial expressions or Hanto gestures?
No. Kizzy pulled a ribbon from her pocket and tied off the braid. Hand speak expresses things that are either too basic to waste words on or too personal.
Too personal?
Yeah, stuff that's really important or hard to say. Like about love or hate or stuff you're scared about. You know how when you have something big to tell someone, you stammer through it or sit in front of your mirror practicing what to say?
Andrisks don't bother with that. They let the gestures take care of all the awkwards. They figure that big, deep feelings are universal enough to be defined with just a flick of the hand or whatever, even though the events that cause those feelings are unique.
That must save them a lot of time, said Rosemary, wondering how much of her life had been spent trying to find the right words in difficult conversations.
Seriously,
But back in the day, you could also use hand speak while you spoke. It was used to add emphasis to stuff you said out loud, so that folks knew you really meant it. Sissix says you can still use it like that, but it's old-fashioned and you only do it in special circumstances. She nodded toward the stall, where the two Andrisks were now moving in sync. What we're seeing here is Sissix being super respectful and honest. But she doesn't know that merchant, right?
Dunno. Don't think so. But that lady's old, so maybe she's just being old-fashioned for her sake.
Rosemary watched the Andrisks. Their hands moved in a graceful, hurried dance.
How are they matching each other? She asked.
Kizzy shrugged.
I guess they agree on something?
Her eyebrows shot up.
Oh, like that.
Sissix had sat down with her back against one of the tables, spreading her legs to either side. The older woman joined her, leaning her back against Sissix's front. They adjusted their tails accordingly. The old woman leaned her head into Sissix's chest, her eyes falling shut. Sissix pressed one palm against the old woman's stomach, holding her close. With her other hand, she spread her fingers wide and ran them up from the old woman's scalp to the tips of her feathers, tugging the shafts gently as she went. To human eyes, they looked like reunited lovers behind a bedroom door, not at all like two strangers in an open-air market. Even across the street, the old woman's face was easy to read. She was in bliss. Rosemary was bewildered. She knew Andrisks were uninhibited by human standards, she reminded herself. But this went beyond what she was expecting. She said.
So,
I have no idea, said Kizzy.
Andrisks, I don't even fucking know.
She was silent for a few seconds.
Do you think they're going to go for it?
She whispered, leaning forward with childlike curiosity.
I bet they are. Holy shit, is that even legal here?
Oh, I hope they don't. But the Andrisks did not couple, though they continued their spontaneous intimacy for a good half an hour, stroking feathers and nuzzling cheeks, oblivious to the stares of passers-by. At one point, two other Andrisks strolled past without more than a casual glance, as if nothing was going on. Rosemary wasn't sure if she should avert her eyes or not. Sissix clearly didn't care who was looking. As Rosemary watched, the peculiarity of the act began to melt away. It was alien, yes, and sudden, but not uncomfortable. There was a weird sort of beauty to it, something about the way their hands moved, the ease with which they touched each other. Baffling as the thought was, Rosemary found herself a little envious. Of the old woman or of Sissix, she wasn't sure. She wished someone would give her that sort of attention on a whim. She wished she were confident enough to give it back. Finally, there was a flutter from the old woman's hands. Sissix let go and helped the woman to her feet. They began looking through the old woman's wares. A jar of scale scrub was selected. Sissix's wrist was scanned. A few more words were exchanged, but without handspeak. A normal discussion between customer and merchant, made all the more surreal by what had come before. The old woman reached up and plucked a feather from her head, wincing as she did so. She held the feather, a faded blue, out to Sissix. Sissix took it, bowing her head low. Her expression was one of gratitude.
Oh, wow,
said Kizzy, putting her hands over her heart. I still don't know what's going on, but that just made me go all mushy.
What?
Rosemary kept her eye on the Andrisks, as if staring long enough might provide an explanation.
What's that mean?
Have you been in Sissix's room yet?
No.
Okay, well, on her wall, there's this big fancy frame with a mess of Andrisk feathers hanging from it. Every Andrisk's got one, as far as I know. See, if you're an Andrisk and somebody really touches your life in some way, you give that person one of your feathers. And then you keep the feathers you get from others as a symbol of how many paths you've crossed. Having a lot of feathers on your wall shows that you've had an impact on a lot of people. That's a pretty big life priority for most Andrisks. But they don't give feathers out casually, not
like for helping you carry something or giving you a free drink or whatever. It's got to be an experience that sticks with you, but it can totally be between strangers. Oh, hey, check it.
Kizzy gestured with her chin toward Sissix, who was giving the old woman one of her feathers.
Has Sissix ever given you a feather?
Rosemary asked.
Yeah, she gave me one a while back, after she got news that one of her hatch fathers died. He was old, but she was really broken up over it. I put her in the shuttle, flew her out to the middle of this nebula, and just let her yell for a few hours. I got a feather the next morning. I think the whole crew's got a Sissix feather by now. Well, not Corbin. Probably not Corbin.
Sissix walked back over to the bench, carrying the jar of scale scrub. She looked between Kizzy and Rosemary.
I apparently have some explaining to do.
Yes, Kizzy said. Explaining would be great.
Sissix nodded toward the road, indicating for them to follow.
A person of her age should be settled down with a house family, raising hatchlings.
Rosemary tried to remember everything she'd been told about Andrisk family structure. Young Andrisks were cared for by community elders, not their biological parents. That much she knew. And there were several familial stages. Andrisks went through as they aged. But beyond that, Rosemary was fuzzy on the details.
Maybe she just didn't want to, Kizzy said. Maybe she liked it better out here.
No, Sissix said. It's because she can't socialize well.
She's shy?
Rosemary asked.
She's a Rashik. There's not a word for it in Clip. She's got a disorder that makes it difficult for her to interact with others. She has trouble understanding other people's intentions, and she speaks oddly. That much was obvious when I first approached her. I offered to couple with her, but she couldn't quite bring herself around to that. So, yes, she's shy, but she also has a hard time figuring other people out. It makes her act a little, well, for lack of a better word, weird.
Why snuggle with a weirdo? Kizzy asked.
Being weird doesn't mean that she doesn't deserve companionship. The fact that she's been running a shop instead of living on a farm somewhere means that she has no house family. And yeah, there are elders who choose not to have house families, but she doesn't even have a feather family. And that's...
Sissix shivered.
Stars, I can't imagine anything worse than that.
Rosemary looked at Sissix. The familial terms were lost on her, but something clicked anyway.
You were comforting her.
That's all it was. You just wanted her to know that someone cared.
Nobody should be alone, Sissix said. Being alone and untouched, there's no punishment worse than that. And she's done nothing wrong. She's just different.
There are lots of other Andrisks here. Why don't they do anything for her?
Because they don't want to, Sissix said, her voice growing fierce. Did you see the two Andrisks walk by while I was with her? Locals, I'm sure. They knew her. I could tell by the look in their eyes. They couldn't be bothered with her. She's an inconvenience.
Sissix's feathers had puffed up. Her sharp teeth flashed as she spoke.
Don't be fooled by all the warm, fuzzy talk and snuggles, Kizzy said to Rosemary. Andrisks can be assholes, too.
Oh, we've certainly got our share, Sissix said. Anyway, sorry to keep you waiting. I hope I didn't make you feel awkward. I know humans can be...
No, Rosemary said. No, it was a very kind thing to do. She watched the Andrisk woman as she walked beside her. Her body was strange, her ways were strange, and yet Rosemary found herself in deep admiration.
Yes, awesome. Go, Sissix, Kizzy said. But I am now starving. What sounds good? Noodles? Skewers? Ice cream? We're grown-ups. We can have ice cream for lunch if we want.
Let's not, Sissix said.
Right, I forgot, Kizzy said and laughed. Ice cream makes her mouth go slack.
Sissix flicked her tongue with disapproval.
Why anyone would make freezing cold food is beyond me.
Oh, what about hoppers? Kizzy said. I could seriously go for a hopper. Spicy peppers and crunchy onions and a big toasty bun.
She looked at Rosemary with eager eyes.
I can't remember the last time I had a hopper,
Rosemary said. It was a lie. She'd never had one. Grasshopper burgers were street food, and that wasn't a realm of cuisine she'd ever been privy to.
She imagined how her mother would react to her chowing down a bug sandwich wrapped in greasy paper while sharing a table with modders and smugglers and arm-hacking patch thieves. She grinned. Sounds great.
Ashby ran his palm down the bare torso, pressing against his own. He'd had his share of lovers before her. He'd felt plenty of skin, but none like hers. She was covered in tiny scales, not thickly layered like Sissix's, but seamless, interlocking. She was silvery, almost reflective, like a fish in a river. Despite all the time he'd spent looking at her, despite how comfortable he was in her company, there were still moments when the sight of her made his words stick in his throat. It was pure chance, of course, that Aeluan so often managed to check all the boxes on the list of things that humans generally find attractive. On a galactic scale, beauty was a relative concept. All humans could agree that Hermogians were hideous, a sentiment the Hermogians heartily returned. Andrisks, well, that depended on who you talked to. Some people liked the feathers. Others couldn't get past their teeth and claws. The Rosk, with their skittery legs and jagged mandibles, would still be the stuff of nightmares, even if they weren't in the habit of carpet-bombing border colonies. But Aeluans, by some weird fluke of evolution, had a look that made most humans drop their jaws, hold up their palms, and say, "Okay, you are a superior species." Aeluan's long limbs and digits were alien, no question, but they moved with fascinating grace. Their eyes were large, but not too large. Their mouths were small, but not too small. In Ashby's experience, it was hard to find a human who couldn't appreciate an Aeluan, even if only in the most objective aesthetic terms. Aeluan women didn't have breasts, but after meeting Pei, Ashby had found that he could do without. His teenage self would have been horrified. Lying beside her, Ashby felt like a hairy, gangly mess. But given what they'd been up to for the better part of the last 2 hours, he figured he couldn't be that repulsive. Or maybe she just didn't care about the whole hairy, gangly thing. That worked, too. "You hungry?" Pei said, though her mouth did not move. Like all Aeluans, her voice was a computerized sound that came from a talk box embedded in the base of her throat. She controlled the talk box neurally, a process she likened to thinking up words while typing. Aeluans lacked a natural sense of hearing and had no need for a spoken language of their own. Among themselves, they communicated through color, specifically iridescent patches on their cheeks that shimmered and shifted like the skin of a bubble. Once they began interacting with other species, however, verbal communication became a necessity, and so, talk boxes came to be. "I'm starving," Ashby said. He knew that as he spoke, the sounds coming from his mouth were collected by the jewelry-like implants set in her forehead. As her brain did not have any means of processing sound, the implant translated his words into neural input that she could understand. He didn't quite grasp how it worked, but he could say the same for most tech. It worked. That was all he needed to know. "Your room or mine?" he asked. That was another part of their standard operating procedure. Make sure only one person was in the room when room service arrived. "Let's see what they've got first." She reached over the edge of the bed and pulled the menu from a nearby table. "What are our odds?" This was an old joke between them. The question of how likely it would be that each of them would find something they liked on the room service menu. Multi-species menus meant well, but they were always hit or miss. 70-30, he said. "Your favor." "How come?" He pointed at the menu. "Because they've got a whole section dedicated to Ro?" "Oh, so they do." He let his eyes slide down her body as she perused the selection of fish eggs. He saw something peeking up over her hip, the edge of a scar, thick and milky white. He hadn't noticed it earlier, but then he'd been a little distracted. "This one's new." "What?" She craned her neck up to look. "Oh, that. Yeah." She went back to the menu. Ashby sighed. a familiar weight growing in his stomach. Pei had many scars, corded stripes across her back, healed bullet holes on her legs and chest, a warped patch left over from the business end of a pulse rifle. Her body was a tapestry of violence. Ashby had no illusions about the risks a cargo runner faced, but somehow her neat clothes, her polished gray ship, her quick wit and smooth voice made it all seem very civilized. It wasn't until he saw physical proof that someone had hurt her that he remembered how dangerous her life was. The life he couldn't share. "Should I ask?" Ashby said, running his finger over the dull flesh. The way she was reclining prevented him from seeing the extent of it, but it trailed all the way to her back, widening as it went.
"Shit, Pei, this is huge."
Pei laid the menu across her chest and looked at him.
"Do you really want to know?"
"Yes. I'm not going to tell you if it's going to make you worry more." "Who said I was worried?" She stroked the creases between his eyebrows with a fingertip.
"You're sweet, but you're a terrible liar."
She rolled over, bringing her face to his.
"There was an incident at a drop site."
"An incident." Her second pair of eyelids fluttered, and her cheeks went pale yellow with flecks of red. The intricacies of her color language were something Ashby would never be able to learn, but he was familiar enough with it to distinguish emotions. This one, for example, was somewhere between exasperated and embarrassed. "It's going to sound so much worse than it actually was." Ashby drummed his fingers against her hip, waiting.
"Oh, fine. We got jumped by a small, very small, I might add, Rosk strike team. They were after the base, not us, but we got a little mixed up in it. Long, messy story short, I ended up on top of one of their heads."
"You what?" Rosk's soldiers were built for combat right down to their genes. 3 times the size of an average human. A fast, raging mass of legs and spikes and keratin plating. Given the opportunity, he didn't think he could prevent himself from running away from a charging Rosk soldier, let alone climb up on her head.
"I told you this was going to sound bad. Anyway, the second to last thing she ever did was buck me off into a stack of crates. As I went crashing down, she took the opportunity to grab me in her mouth. I've got good protective gear, but Rosk jaws..."
She shook her head.
"What you see there on my hip is the result of one of her mandibles slicing through. But it ended up working out well for me, actually. Being in her mouth gave me a nice soft place to shoot."
Ashby swallowed.
"So you..." "No, that wasn't enough to kill her. My pilot's second shot was, though."
She cocked her head, second eyelid sliding in sideways.
"You're bothered."
"It's hard not to be."
"Ashby."
She reached out to touch his cheek.
"You shouldn't ask."
He pressed his palm against the small of her back, pulling her in close.
"I really want this war to be over. You know, most of this..."
She took his hand and guided it over her scars.
"Happened in GC space. This one's from an Akarak who tried to board my ship. This one's from a smuggler who didn't want me to call the authorities on his phony bots. And this one's from a gene tweak headcase who was just having a bad day. Nobody protects me when I'm in uncontested space. Nobody but me. With military work, I get escorts when I'm out in the open, and armed guards when I'm unloading down planetside. In a lot of ways, military work is safer. Pays better, too. And it's not as if they send me into heavy combat. Soon as I drop my goods, I turn right around and come back home."
"Do incidents happen often?"
"No." She studied his face. "Are you more bothered that I was attacked or that I shot someone?"
Ashby was quiet for a moment.
"The former. I don't care about you shooting that Rosk."
She stretched out a leg and hooked it around one of his. "That's an odd thing for an Exodin to say." Pei, like everybody else in the GC, knew that Exodins were pacifists. Before they had left Earth for the open,
The refugees had known that the only way they were going to survive was to band together. As far as they were concerned, their species' bloody, war-torn history ended with them.
"I don't know if I can explain this," Ashby said. "I wish war didn't happen, but I don't judge other species for taking part in it. What you're doing out there, I mean, I can't find fault in what you do. The Rosk are killing innocent people in territories that don't belong to them, and they won't be reasoned with. I hate saying it, but in this case, I think violence is the only option."
Pei's cheeks went a somber orange.
"It is. I'm only on the edges of it, and from what I've seen, trust me, Ashby, this is a war that needs to be fought."
She exhaled and thought.
"Do you think badly of me for, I don't know, for accepting business from soldiers?"
"No, you're not a mercenary. All you do is get supplies to people. There's no fault in that."
"What about me shooting the Rosk, though? The one that had me in her mouth. You know that's not the first time I've had to defend myself."
"I know, but you're a good woman. The things you have to do don't change that. And your species, you know how to end a war. Truly end it. It doesn't get in your blood. You do what needs doing and leave it at that."
"Not always," Pei said. "We have as many dark patches in our history as anyone else."
"Maybe, but not like us. Humans can't handle war. Everything I know about our history shows that it brings out the worst in us. We're just not mature enough for it or something. Once we start, we can't stop. And I've felt that in me, you know, that inclination toward acting out in anger. Nothing like what you've seen. I don't pretend to know what war is like, but humans, we've got something dangerous in us. We almost destroyed ourselves because of it."
Pei ran her long fingers around his coiled hair. "But you didn't, and you learned from it. You're trying to evolve. I think the rest of the galaxy underestimates what that says about you."
She paused.
"Well, about the Exodans at least," she said, her cheeks a sly green. "The Solans' motives are a bit more questionable."
He laughed. "Not that you're biased or anything."
"It's your fault if I am."
She propped herself up on the pillow.
"Don't change the subject. You haven't finished your original thought."
"Which one?"
"What is it that actually bothers you?"
Right. He sighed. Who was he to talk to her about war? What did he know about it at all, aside from news feeds and reference files? War was nothing more than a story to him, something that happened to people he didn't know in places he'd never been. It felt insulting to tell her how he felt about it.
"Go on," she said.
"The Rosk that bit you, she's dead."
"Yes."
Her tone was matter of fact, no remorse, no pride. Ashby nodded.
"That's what bothers me."
"That a Rosk died?"
"No."
He tapped his chest.
"This.
This feeling in here? That's what bothers me. I hear that you shot someone, and I'm glad of it. I'm glad that you stopped her before she could hurt you more. I'm glad that she's dead because that means you're still here. What does that say about me? What does it say about me being relieved that you can do the thing I condemn my own species for?"
Pei looked at him a long time.
She pressed close to him.
"It means," she said, her forehead against his, her lithe limbs wrapped around his body, "that you understand more about violence than you think."
She pressed her fingers against his cheek, a touch of worry crossing her face.
"And that's good, considering where you're headed."
"We're not going into a combat zone. The board says the situation there is perfectly stable."
"Uh-huh," she said flatly. "I never looked a Toremi in the eye, but they do not sound stable to me. That species was sending our explorers back in pieces before you guys even knew the rest of us were out here. I don't buy this alliance. And I don't like the idea of you going out there."
Ashby laughed. "This coming from you?
There's a difference."
"Really?" Her eyes shifted, displeased.
"Yes, really. I know which end of a gun to point at someone. You won't even pick one up.
She exhaled, her cheeks turning a pale orange.
That's not fair. I'm sorry. All I mean is, I know you. I know you've probably thought this out long and hard. But I don't know the Toremi. I only know what I hear, and just, please, Ashby, be careful.
He kissed her forehead. And now you know how I feel every time you leave.
It's an awful way to feel, she said with a smirk. And I wish you didn't feel it either, but I suppose it's good, in a way. It means that you care for me as much as I care for you.
She placed his hand on her hip.
I like that.
They put off room service for another hour.